Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Ray Woodson, but before we talk to Ray, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. Live in San Francisco and love to play golf? Visit TPC Harding Park and purchase your two-year resident card, giving you immediate savings on golf and other programs at the park. Cut your green fees in half by purchasing your card today. Visit www.tpc.com/Harding Park for more information. Well, today being August the 28th is a very special day because it's my parents' anniversary. 57 years of marriage. So congratulations to Joe and Rose Castellano, my parents, and hope they have a great one. Now let's get to our guest, Ray Woodson. Well, Ray, I billed it as a major announcement. And it really is when you think about the fact that the Golden State Warriors are very popular. And our announcement is that we are going to be doing a Golden State Warriors podcast called Dubs OT. The defending NBA champs will be talking about them right here on thesportsvirus.com. Once a week, we've got sponsors already. TPC Harding Park is going to be one of our sponsors. Toscalito Tire and Automotive is signing up with us as well. Really looking forward to this starting on October the 17th. It's going to be a lot of fun to talk to you, Ray, and others, players and others surrounding the Golden State Warriors.
Very excited about it, Joe. And I've been covering this team for quite a few years, back in the days when they were trying to get a draft pick, and it ended up being Harrison Barnes, and to this point where they are the greatest show in sports. So to be able to cover them and talk about them, it's going to be a joy, and thanks to our sponsors for jumping on. It's going to be a fun ride this year, if it's anything like last year. And, you know, having covered them almost game to game in these last 3 years with the two championships and then the Game 7 disappointment, you know, I almost think like the Game 7 disappointment has added drama and texture to this whole story. But, you know, if all things go well this year, if they're healthy, we're going to see them repeat as champions. And we're talking about one of the all-time great NBA franchises. So it's going to be fun for sure.
Yeah, what a change it has been for that franchise, because for so many years there was so much losing going on, and they always had the support of the fans, but now they have both. They have the support of the fans, and they have a great team that should be competitive, you know, should be competing for the NBA title with the way that it's put together. And you mentioned it. It's all about the health. I think if they stay healthy, they're going to be right there. And they've been pretty fortunate in that area that their star players have stayed healthy enough to win. Yeah, they've been banged up and bruised when they got there. But, man, last year was quite a ride.
Well, I go back to the moment where Zaza ran into Durant. And the fact that that was not a more devastating injury was the key to the season to me. That was the key moment, that it wasn't worse there. And that Durant was able to come back and be the same guy and then just have an epic final series. So, yeah, that's part of it. You got to have that luck. The thing about the Warriors, though, and it's one of the reasons they got Durant, is, okay, if Curry's hurt, you still have a number one option. If Durant is hurt, you still have a number one option. So, you know, the depth even you know, for having the lead dog is incredible. And the fact that they brought everybody back pretty much, you know, if you'd have told me that they were going to come back with Livingston, Iguodala, and McGee, I wouldn't have taken that bet. But Bob Myers is, I mean, he's just amazing in the way he works that salary cap and the way the circumstances fall for this team. And I'm sure for a lot of these players, all things being equal, to be with this group and have this opportunity to do something historic, that kind of weighs heavily in the Warriors' favor. So, yeah, that's why most of these guys are back. And then you add, I mean, I think a steal in the draft from Jordan Bell.
Oh, yeah, from Oregon. Yeah, he's going to be great.
Man, yeah, they're doing all right. Now, the McGee one is intriguing to me because the Warriors were faced with a couple of options, either they don't bring McGee back and they develop their younger players, or McGee comes back and they're good. So, I mean, either way, it was a good option for them. I think they would have been just as well off trying to develop a guy like Damian Jones a little bit more. This was going to be a big year for him. But nonetheless, I mean, I think for a lot of NBA teams, they looked at McGee and said, well, he's perfect with that team. Is he going to be that good with us? And I think that was one of the big questions they had. And I think for McGee, in the long run, this is going to be so much better for him, for his career. And, you know, this is one of the arguments they make for a lot of these players. The selling point is that you are elevated by getting a ring. You know, it may not mean money up front, but it'll be a whole lot more for you long term down the road in your career. And so I think that the players who are here now could tell you that. And going for a third ring in 4 years is pretty amazing stuff.
It is. And I think a lot of Giants fans are also Warriors fans. I mean, there are players like Brandon Crawford that are into it. So we kind of have a good transition here into our Giants podcast. But definitely catch us in about 6 weeks for the Warriors podcast, October the 17th, Dubs OT. Now, you know, on to the Giants. And, you know.
Speaking of three rings.
Speaking of three rings, just coming off Players Weekend where they were swept. In Arizona, a couple of games were close, and there was a real positive, I think, in the pitching performance on Sunday of Chris Stratton.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of comes out of nowhere for a lot of people. I mean, he was a first-round draft pick of the Giants, a late bloomer, I guess you could say, and he really wasn't even pitching that well at Triple-A this year. But, Ray, you know, you look at what he's done lately, he's finally getting confidence. I mean, I think he's always had the stuff. He throws 94 miles an hour with his fastball, but he's really getting confident with the other pitches. I mean, he really seems to know what he's doing now with his breaking ball. And, yeah, he had five walks on Sunday, but he struck out 10 again. So, to me, it looks like just the confidence of this kid is building up. And I don't even want to call him a kid anymore because I think he's 27 or 28, and he might be in their future plans.
Yeah, Stratton's one of those guys I think people forgot about, maybe gave up on, kind of a late bloomer for sure, as many pitchers are. I remember talking to him the night he was drafted, and a pitcher out of Mississippi State, SEC pitcher. So he comes in a little older than some of these prospects already, and then the long climb to the major leagues. And, yeah, it's about gaining confidence, consistency with the off-speed pitches, like you said, getting a great late snap now on the breaking ball. And what they've had, 6-10 strikeout performances by their starters this year, and he's got 2 in the last 3 starts. So that's an eye-opener. Now, what is his role going to be for next year? We don't know. He could be the long man, sort of Yusmeiro Petit type, who bounces between long relief and starting. Sounds like from what Bruce Bochy, Dave Rudetti, and those guys say, that he's taken well to that, that he's pretty adaptable. But so's Ty Block, you know, so that's going to be the interesting dynamic for them because, you know, what we've been saying about Ty Block all year is could he, you know, sustain that performance as a starting pitcher as pretty much a two-pitch guy trying to work in a third pitch? He's done pretty well for a number 5 starter. So it gives you a couple more options for sure, and that's a definite positive coming out of this. These young pitchers have shown they can compete at the major league level, and so, you know, that's not a worry anyway, I think, for a lot of teams, number 5 starter. But I think for the Giants, you know, it's nice to know that you can count on a couple of guys to fill that role, or if not, be long relief. And, you know, of course, a lot more of the story will be told in spring training next year. But this is sort of like a pre-spring training, isn't it? You're finding out a lot of stuff about some young players, at least the ones who aren't getting hurt.
Yeah, that is the one advantage to having a poor season like this is that it is kind of like the Cactus League where you can take your chances and, you know, you're really not worried about wins and losses. They have 80 losses now, the second team to reach 80. Yeah, so you can do things like that. You know, the one thing that was to me a negative for Stratton is that he had to wear a uniform and a cap that looked like he was wearing a creamsicle on his head.
Good Lord.
Well, how about those uniforms on Players Weekend? What would you think of them?
They were heinous. I'm sorry. I was just not into them. It looked like a creamsicle, some sort of sherbet ice cream experiment gone wrong. The socks were bizarre. I saw some of the unis around the major leagues that looked pretty good. I thought the Marlins unis looked all right. I thought it was kind of the flavor of South Florida. But, I'm not in on the Giants. I know they're trying to sell different brands in the stores and things like that, but I don't see that one making the rounds around here. I'm sorry. Some of those socks were truly bizarre. The nicknames were kind of fun. You know, I saw Greinke's nickname was Greinke. So that
Buster's was Buster.
Buster was Buster. Yeah, they just kind of played between the lines. But there was some fun stuff out there. So I think it was it Eric Sogard had nerd power?
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. So that part of it was fun. But, yeah, I could go the rest of my baseball life without seeing those unis again.
I was actually in L.A. for the weekend, so I went to a Dodger game, which I hadn't been at Dodger Stadium in a long time. And, you know, Silver Fox for Chase Utley, I thought that was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
But
okay.
But the real thing I noticed about the Dodgers, and, of course, you know, they're the top team in the majors right now, was just the way Yasiel Puig was playing. He was just hustling like crazy. He made a great catch in the corner where he slammed into the wall, the way he was running the bases, taking chances. And, I mean, you think about a year ago when they sent him to AAA, and I'm not going to say that, you know, one player turned the Dodgers around, but just that kind of attitude can change a team around. And you think about it with the Giants, maybe a couple of tweaks here and there, they can – you know, they can change everything around for next year from being down in the doldrums to being a competitive team, I think.
Well, here's the problem. I mean, you have a couple of incredibly talented young players, and Puig I'll put in that category, although he's getting older now. He's been around a few years, and, you know, Puig got that wake-up call when he got sent to AAA last year. They were about ready to give up on him, and he's been a changed person this year, it sounds like. You know, also a little less pressure on him. You know, you can put him down in the order. And that's how, you know, stacked that lineup is, because you've got a couple of really talented young players like Bellinger and, of course, Seager, who, you know, seems like he's been around for a few years, and what, he's just 22.
Yeah,
the Giants don't have those kind of young impact players just yet. You know, we're waiting. And it may be another year or two you see a couple of guys who make an impact. And I mean, nobody's going to make an impact like Bellinger is, you know, where they're going to hit 40, 45 home runs. I don't see that happening. You know, Chris Shaw, I think, is a promising player, and he's closing well in Sacramento, so that's encouraging. They want to see Duggar next year. So that'll give them a lift, but it's not the talent the Dodgers have. So, yeah, the Giants have 80 losses, and the Dodgers have more than 90 wins.
And they have
more young talent coming up. So that's going to be the problem. Now, the team we just saw, the Diamondbacks, could be a template for the Giants, because they struggled last year and they've bounced back nicely this year and are in contention for a wild card spot. But what you got to remember about last year is, well, they had a couple of pretty talented young players who were hurt, right? That was Pollock and Peralta.
Right.
And so they get them back, and Greinke had kind of a down year last year. He comes back and he's pitching like we're used to seeing with Greinke. So I would say that the parallel is, you know, Bumgarner's been out for most of the year. He comes back next year and is Bumgarner. That'll go a long way toward helping them out. And if Cueto can come back and overcome the blister problems, and I'm assuming that he doesn't opt out and they're on the hook for that contract, you know, for better or worse. But I think there's still something left in the tank with Cueto if he can overcome the blister issues. And, you know, the thing with Cueto that you got to remember, And I think that the fans sometimes forget this with these players. They're human beings. And Cueto had a rough start of the year because he was dealing with trying to get his ailing father back into the country.
That's right.
And so that set back his spring training. Who knows? That might have contributed to the blister issues. You look at Brandon Crawford, who is dealing with family tragedy with his sister-in-law, and also started the year with a groin injury, and I think that lingered for a while. Now he's starting to come around and look like the guy that we saw last couple of years. But there's always, you know, some personal stuff the players deal with, and they try to compartmentalize it, but it's not easy, and it can also lead to some physical issues as well. So you had some players having down years, like Pence, who's been hurt as well, and I'm not convinced that he's an everyday player anymore. He might be a platoon for next year. If Crawford comes back healthy, you know, Panic and Belt dealing with concussions again, my goodness. I mean, if you're going to come back with these guys and hope that they have, you know, full seasons where they're productive, I don't know. I don't know if you can count on that. So you better get some impact from your young players who are coming up, and you got to find a power bat. And, you know, me and everybody else have been saying that for months now. That's got to be a huge priority for them in the offseason.
We'll have more with Ray Woodson in just a moment. Do you want to go to the perfect restaurant and bakery before a Giants game? Why not go to the place where Matt Cain ate before he threw his perfect game? That's Townsend Restaurant and Bakery. It's true, I'm not making this up. On June the 13th, 2012, Matt Cain had a great meal at Town's End, then took the mound down the road at AT&T Park and tossed the first perfect game in Giants history. Your meal can be just as effective after you choose one of their homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. Town's End also serves cage-free Petaluma eggs. For 26 years, Town's End has been capturing the spirit of San Francisco with consistent quality from their family-run business. Serving breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., and brunch on Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Town's End is located right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Eat at Town's End Restaurant and Bakery, and who knows, perhaps you can be perfect that day too. One of the biggest problems, Ray, is that as far as evaluating these young players, they didn't get a chance to do it because of injuries. I mean, you look at Jarrett Parker, he's playing now, and you get a little bit of a feel for what he can do. He hasn't put up that many home runs because he was out most of the year. Christian Arroyo, you wanted to see him again, especially in September. Yeah. Can't see him. Tyler Beede, he's out. You know, all these guys that you thought in a lost season like this, this would be a great opportunity to see those guys and what they can do, and we're not going to be able to do it.
It's been frustrating. And then, you know, what had just happened recently, their number one pick, Elliot Ramos, he was beamed, and now he's out with a concussion.
Yeah, they're looking at him with concussion symptoms, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're going to shut him down, and maybe he'll come back for Arizona Fall League. And he was very impressive. So it's just everywhere. It's been, you know, on top of everything else, and I think the Giants do earn some criticism for not being proactive as far as the depth, especially in the outfield, but it's also true that they've had incredibly bad luck this year. I mean, the injuries, it just started from Will Smith in spring training and on it went. And then, of course, the deal with Bumgarner, which kind of blew a hole in the season. So that's been part of the story as well, but that's definitely true. They've not been able to evaluate these young players like they wanted to, and that slows their development, and it slows the clock getting them up here and seeing what they can do at the major league level. And I think of Duggar in particular. This was going to be a big year for him. And now he's seeing, you know, he maybe is going to be called up in September anyway, but he could have been called up sooner if he was continuing on the trajectory of before. But that didn't happen. And that's kind of a critical spot. What are they going to do in center field? What are they going to do with their leadoff spot in the long term? Because, you know, Span is not the future.
No, he has not had a great year defensively out there, and he's been okay at the plate, but not what I think the Giants signed up for when they got him. They thought maybe he'd be more of a 300 hitter. And the other guy that you signed up for a lot of money, over $60 million, that you didn't get what you wanted was Mark Melancon. I got to admit, I'm confused about this whole strategy with him right now. I mean, he has the pronator issue. He was out. I know he wanted to prove something, you know, that he was worth that money coming back. But if you're going to pitch and you're not really 100%, and he says he's not in danger of getting more seriously hurt, but still, he has admitted that he's not 100%. It doesn't feel right, whatever. Yeah. And you've got surgery sitting there on the table. Why wouldn't you just do that right away? I don't understand why he's out there pitching.
Yeah, I could still see that happening. And they may come to that conclusion and may feel like they still have a timetable to get him ready for spring training. But, on the surface, I don't get it. But, you know, he goes on to explain that he's trying to set an example for younger players, too. And I mean, there's a little bit about, you know, that story from Ken Rosenthal that came out earlier this year about the stretching and all that. And, I think it was a tempest in a teapot. But still, I think he wanted to put to rest in anybody's mind that there was a lack of commitment in that regard, that he just has a certain way of doing things. But at some point, you know, there's that line you cross over where you're hurting or helping your team by going out there and playing hurt or showing that you're a gamer. And I think, you know, when you're getting into September and you're past 80 losses and you're looking at young players, you know, it's time to shut it down. You know, there's nothing to be gained from it. I don't think long term. You know, if that's the point he wanted to make, okay, he's proved it. He's gone out there and he's taken his turn. But personally, I want to see more of Dyson that they can go forward with him, and Kyle Crick, too, you know, who's been pretty impressive in most of the outings he's had. And just worry about Melancon for next year. Yeah, I know the money is a big part of it. And if you're a conscientious player, I guess I applaud you for that. But in the end, yeah, it's the money. So make sure you don't blow your investment.
Well, the thing, too, about it, Ray, is that you signed him to be your closer. You spent all that money. But if you had to do it without looking at the money, you'd probably in spring training say it would be an open competition for the closer spot between him and Dyson, right?
Right. And, you know, what are you paying Dyson? So the way you have to look at it at that point is, okay, I'm going to look at it like if Melanson's setup guy, I'm paying him Dyson money. And if Dyson's doing the job, I'm paying him Melanson money. That's the kind of the mental gymnastics you have to do to justify these contracts. But I wouldn't care. At this point, it's got to be results. And if Dyson is doing the job, okay, then you, and if he falters a little bit, then Melanson could slide in. It may end up being that way. My sense is they're going to go into spring training, and it's going to be Melanson's job to lose.
Absolutely. I think you're right about that. Let's finish up with talking about Pablo Sandoval, because he's definitely a polarizing figure as far as the social media is concerned with Giants fans. I mean, there are a lot of people who think he's kind of wasting their time and, you know, why have him even take up at bats? But he's not costing you anything. You can take a look at him here. I just don't – he doesn't have his right-handed swing. There's no doubt about that. Hasn't had that for a while. But so, you know, that makes him, you know, very – he's just not valuable at all when you're talking about facing left-handed pitching. And I do wonder about him taking up at-bats, especially in spring training, because that's when you don't have a whole lot of time to look at players. And I would think you're going to want to look at Arroyo as much as you can at third. You saw some of him this year. I don't know. I mean, how much playing time does he get next year in spring training? Ryder Jones is another guy who's a third baseman.
Yep.
So where do you think the Giants stand as far as Pablo?
Well, I think just what we were talking about before with the injuries to the young players, and you mentioned Arroyo and Ryder Jones, both have been hurt at points this season, missed a lot of time where you couldn't see them develop. And so this is a plan C, right? If you've got a guy who's done things at the major league level and has done some pretty special things here, who's now 31 years old, and like you said, doesn't have the right-handed swing, so he's limited in what he can contribute. He's done okay at third base. He doesn't have the range that he did before. And I'm thinking about the 2011 Pablo. That's a long time ago when he was right. Really in shape.
Yeah.
He's in better shape now, but I look at his range. It's still very limited at third base. He's making most of the plays. And I mean, he hasn't been horrible, but if you're looking for long-term, wouldn't you rather see what a young guy could do? A guy who's going to give you, the OPS plus that Pablo is, where I don't even think with the numbers he's put up so far, and, granted, it's a small period of time, not even replacement level. So, at that point, why wouldn't you just look at your younger players? But I think what he is, above all else, is a low-cost backstop plan in case these younger players work out. But I'm going to go into spring training and give Arroyo the glove, put him at third base, and let him go. And, he's done well in spring training before. Definitely want to see him come out of the gates, but if he doesn't, okay, I guess Sandoval is there and you could use him and I guess throw him up against right-handed pitchers. At least he would be, I'd rather have that situation as opposed to him not being able to hit lefties, because that's more at bats against righties. But it's this whole thing was low risk, but I think it's limited upside too with Pablo.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, Ray, hey, thanks a lot for the time today. Look forward to the Warriors podcast. But, of course, we've got a few more Giants podcasts here to do, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again before the end of the Giants season.
Sounds good, Joe.
That's Ray Woodson. Join us again on Wednesday. We'll be talking with our regular guest, San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.